The Hamlet Podcast, Episode 12. Hello and welcome to this exploration of Shakespeare's King Lear with me, your host, Conor Hanratty. Last time, we saw Edmund faking his concern for his brother, pretending he was trying to hide the letter, which he had himself written. Gloucester, their father, fell for the ruse and has now got his hands on said letter. He reads it aloud. This policy and reverence of age makes the world bitter to the best of our times, keeps our fortunes from us till our oldness cannot relish them. I begin to find an idle and fond bondage in the oppression of aged tyranny, who sways not as it hath power, but as it is suffered. Come to me, that of this I may speak more. If our father would sleep till I waked him, you should half his revenue forever, and live the beloved of your brother, Edgar. This letter is written in fairly opaque language, which is probably wise, as is so often the case when characters come in halfway through a conversation. Here Gloucester only reads the second half of the letter. He picks up at the juicy part. The custom of respecting the elderly makes life cruel and bitter for us who should be in our prime. This policy and reverence of age makes the world bitter to the best of our times. The letter continues that these customs also keep our inheritance from us until we're too old to benefit from them or enjoy them. Keeps our fortunes from us till our oldness cannot relish them. The writer then says that he is starting to think it lazy and even stupid, this slavish system of power belonging to our elders. They have this power not because they deserve it, but because we let them have it. We suffer them to hold on to it. I begin to find an idle and fond bondage in the oppression of aged tyranny, who sways not as it hath power, but as it is suffered. He then writes and tells the reader, we are all supposed to believe it's addressed to Edmund, to come and discuss these dangerous matters in person. Come to me, that of this I may speak more. As if what's written isn't dangerous enough, even if it's opaque, the next sentence is far worse. He writes that if their father was dead, he'd share a full half of his money with Edmund, and they'd be beloved brothers forever. If our father would sleep till I waked him, you should half his revenue forever, and live the beloved of your brother, Edgar. This idea of the father sleeping until Edgar woke him is more of a threat than a gentle depiction of a father taking a nap. It's outrageous. But, again, it's all made up. Edmund has written this to get his brother into trouble. And it has worked perfectly. Gloucester is appalled. Conspiracy. Sleep till I waked him? You should enjoy half his revenue? My son, Edgar. Had he a hand to write this? A heart and brain to breed it in? When came this to you? Who brought it? Gloucester is outraged that his legitimate son would be conspiring like this against him, and trying to enlist the poor bastard Edmund as a co-conspirator. He quotes the best, or worst, bits of the letter as he skims through it a second time. He's having a hard time believing it, wondering if Edgar could have written such things, or indeed could have thought or felt such things either. Had he a hand to write this? A heart and brain to breed it in? He wants to know how Edmund got the letter. When came this to you? Who brought it? Edmund has the perfect Shakespearean answer. It was not brought me, my lord. There's the cunning of it. I found it thrown in at the casement of my closet. Whenever there's trouble to be had in a Shakespeare play, it will likely arrive in through a casement. Really, this is just a kind of window. But letters and messages very often appear anonymously through such windows, landing into rooms and closets, and surprising people with bad news. Of course, Edmund is lying, but it's a vivid image. Now Gloucester asks a very sensible question. You know the character to be your brother's? He's wondering if this letter is even in Edgar's handwriting. It's not our place to ask why he doesn't recognise it himself. Edmund's answer is ingeniously wicked. He says, If the matter were good, my lord, I dare swear it were his. But in respect of that, I would fain think it were not. In other words, if Edgar was writing decent things, I'd be sure that this was his handwriting. But considering what's on that page, I'd much prefer that it was not. Again, Edmund is playing his game, but here he has managed to confirm that it does look like Edgar's handwriting, while appearing to stand up for his brother's innocence. And Gloucester is convinced. He says, It is his. Edmund is surely grinning on the inside, but outwardly he says, It is his hand, my lord, but I hope his heart is not in the contents. So he's confirming for Gloucester too, while pretending to hope that Edgar would never stand behind such sentiments. Which of course he wouldn't, because he didn't even write the damned letter. Gloucester has to ask Edmund if he had any idea about all this. Hath he never heretofore sounded you in this business? It'd be good to know if Edgar has tried to speak to Edmund about such ideas in the past. Edmund, cold as ice, says, Never, my lord. But I have heard him oft maintain it to be fit that, sons at perfect age and fathers declining, the father should be as ward to the son, and the son manage his revenue. Edgar hasn't ever spoken about killing their father or trying to get his hands on his inheritance. But, Edmund is saying, he's been known to mention that he thinks it appropriate for sons in the prime of life, with fathers advancing in age, to take over the management of the family affairs and finances. The son should be in charge, with the father like a ward, in a protected but now powerless position. Some detailed notes on the play might send you now in the direction of Guazzo or Montaigne, who both had written intellectual discussions of these ideas, of the transfer of power from fathers to sons, especially when it was to do with money. This is all very well, and perhaps Shakespeare was aware of them or had read them, but far more pressing here is that this is exactly what happened in the previous scene. Lear has become a ward of his own sons-in-law, handing over all management to them and to his daughters. Edmund is taking advantage of what he's just seen, of what's in the air at court, and is now using this to trap his brother in some kind of conspiracy. We can imagine that Edmund's plan is to get his brother disinherited, in much the same way as Cordelia was. Gloucester is absolutely furious. The plan has worked almost too easily. He's blind with rage, but will save his outburst for the next episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, and do keep an eye on the website, thehamletpodcast.com, for a much-needed overhaul that will be coming online in the next week or so. I hope that you've been enjoying our first few months of King Lear already, and that you're in it for the long haul with me. There's plenty more to come, and I look forward to speaking to you again next week.